Standard Bank Group CEO Sim Tshabalala participated in the Financial Times Global Boardroom, focusing on strategies for a world transformed by crisis. He was interviewed on the impact of COVID-19 on the state of the African economy and business by the Africa editor for the Financial Times, David Pilling.
Sim Tshabalala, CEO of Standard Bank, Africa's biggest bank by assets. Thanks very much for joining us today. There's a lot to get through, so I'm going to dive straight in. First of all, let me start with the bank. Not surprisingly, you had a tough pandemic. Dividends were down sharply. Bad loan provisions were up sharply. First of all, are you confident that you did everything you could to manage this pandemic as well as you could from a corporate banking point of view?
David, thank you very, very much for having me. It's always a pleasure to be with you, and it's a great privilege to be part of this conversation. I think there's no question that the year 2020 was unprecedented. It was complicated, and it was very, very demanding. I would go so far as to say demanding both emotionally, spiritually, and physically. I'm sure you would agree with me. And whilst we think that 2021 will be better, we still have a very long way from normal. It's very hard to see when we'll get back, for example, to performance at the levels of 2019. But I think we can say, like you have just summarized, the performance of the group has been pretty good. I think, firstly, we're doing everything in our power to keep our staff safe and keep our clients in an operating condition, make sure that we're supporting them, we're supporting our communities. I think from a performance perspective, it was a terrible outcome. Group headline earnings, like you say, were down 43%, with our return on equity falling to 8.9%. So in that sense, it was a really tough year. And that outcome was attributable exclusively to the pandemic.
This got an increase in bad loans or?
So a combination of things. You had a dramatic increase in bad debts. And then, of course, because of the shutdown, which, as you know, in South Africa was amongst the most hard in the world, dramatic slowdown in economic activity. Small enterprises in the hospitality sector came to a grinding halt. Our branch activity slowed down. Our ATM activity slowed down. Our home loans came to a grinding halt around March and April because the deeds registry was closed. The vehicle and asset finance business came to a grinding halt because the car registration system also came to a grinding halt in South Africa. And so it was a very, very difficult year.
Yeah. If you could sum up your strategy for getting through this, what was it? Was it to hunker down? Was it to slim down? I know the government has been encouraging you to lend more. There are the guarantee programs and some banks have not actually sort of availed themselves of that guarantee because they say that it's not, in a sense, safe to do so. I mean, what has been your strategy?
So I think our strategy was firstly to start, as I say, by making sure that we protected our staff. Secondly, we immediately looked to supporting our clients. So we extended extensive restructures for our corporate sector. We gave our retail clients payment holidays. Right. We gave students and people who could prove their bona fides interest and capital payment holidays. We gave people holidays on insurance payments. And we responded, I think, as one would reasonably expect. We also provided support to corporate social investment. We entered into partnerships with some very active community-based organizations. And all of this gave rise to a large part of that smash up that I was referring to in our profit and loss account. What we also did, though, David, was we accelerated digital activity. Our view was that the trends that we had seen prior to the commencement of COVID-19 were going to be accelerated, and they did indeed accelerate. We had moved very, very quickly to digital adoption in both our retail and wholesale business. By way of example, in the retail business, roughly 99% of activity now happens on digital channels.
Right.
We moved our staff. So 75% of our people worked from home. So the 25% were in the front line, and they remained in our branches and in our call centers and in our dealing rooms. But 75% of our people worked from home.
Right.
Sorry,
I just want to say to the audience that there'll be a time for question and answers later, so if people can be thinking of their questions. And apologies for interrupting. But what I was going to ask sort of flows very nicely on from what you were saying. I mean, what have you done during the pandemic that you think may continue after the pandemic, changes in business practice? I mean, you mentioned that 75% of people are working from home. Presumably that won't continue when things get back to quote unquote normal. But what practices that you've learned during the pandemic do you think will remain?
I think, David, there's lots of uncertainty, right? It's very hard to see where we'll go. Firstly, I mean, we're quite optimistic that 2021 will be better than 2020. I'm sure we'll come back to the economic arguments and the economic issues.
Yes, I'm going to move on to that now.
But I think, as I've said to you, let me just repeat again, we tried to keep our employees safe. Mm-hmm. We improved and worked hard at improving client experience and operational efficiency. And then thirdly, we will continue to, as we did in the middle of the pandemic, to support our clients as they recover and rebuild their businesses.
Yes. Well, let's talk about... Sorry, Sam.
No, go ahead.
Well... Sorry, this is the difficulty of communicating via this medium. I'm really apologize for interrupting. But I did want to just talk a little bit about South Africa and the economy. This idea that of returning to normal is what everybody's kind of grasping for. In South Africa, that seems like a ways off in a sense. The vaccine rollout has been extremely slow, I think 0.6% of the population so far vaccinated. The prospect of getting to anything like a herd immunity, which I know is the final goal, it seems very distant. I mean, how quickly do you think South Africa can bounce back, both in terms of health terms and therefore the corollary of that in terms of the economy?
David, I do think that, the economy declined by 7% last year. The National Treasury expects that it will recover, 3.3% growth this year. The IMF predicts 3%. Our own economists predict 4.6%.
Right.
And the basis on which they believe that is that the decline of 7% was so severe that just the base effects will get us back there. I do think that 2021 is likely to be a reasonably strong recovery for South Africa. We think that the pace of growth will definitely depend on addressing the electricity shortages. I mean, you've been to South Africa and you understand the challenges that are faced by us in electricity and logistics. Mm-hmm. We do think that household consumption expenditure has increased. We saw that increase by 7.5% in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
And it will continue to increase into the first quarter. All the high-frequency data is indicating an improvement. We think that the incomes of the wealthier will continue to recover, as we saw that recovery in 2020. For the poor, I think the large increases in unemployment will be terrible news, without question. The blow suffered in the temporary increase in social grants will soften the blow for the poor. But I think the real challenge is going to be the need to make sure that all sectors of the economy are able to recover. Now, turning to your question around the country's response to COVID-19, I think, there was a challenge, if you recall, with the commencement of the rollout of the vaccines in the country. But that seems now to be getting back on an even keel. The government has agreed that to reopen the J&J process and that they will be allowed, they're negotiating, allowing Aspen to do the distribution. This conversation
we can make, well, there'll be fill and finish, won't there? And 300 million doses coming out of that plant, we hope.
Yeah. And the fact is, you know, just to reflect on it from a global point of view, I think there's no question, if one looks at the lessons learned by the world from, you know, from the days of the plague of Athens right up to Ebola, there's no question that we've learned a great deal of lessons, and the African continent is able actually to, as COVAX says, to distribute 600 million vaccines by the end of this year. I mean, they said that in February, and there's no reason to believe that they can't
right.
do it.
In South Africa, it's 40 million, isn't it?
In South Africa, it's 40 million. Yeah.
Yes. So can that be done by the end of the year?
I think it can be done. The partnership between government and business and the role of the health sector in that context, I think makes it possible. And secondly, the country's capacity in logistics is actually very, very good. And so my view is that business working hand in glove with government will resolve this.
Is there a sovereign debt crisis looming? And how does that affect you as a bank, if that is the case?
I don't think there's a sovereign debt crisis looming in South Africa. I think the reasons for why anybody would have believed that have now been averted in our view. So the things that are necessary to rebalance the country's fiscal position are well on track. The Ramaphosa government has worked very, very hard to address corruption. Steps have been taken to strengthen the law enforcement agencies. Corruption in different parts of the state-owned enterprises has been addressed. I made mention of what's happening at Eskom and the need to address electricity supplies.
Yep.
Is now being addressed. There's a decent management team there. They're executing at this decent plan.
And so the Zuma years are behind us, are they? I mean,
The Zuma years are behind us. The Zondo Commission is doing very, very well. I think they've done an extraordinary job in exposing corruption. There have been a number of high-profile arrests that you might be aware of. And as I say, Eskom is now being governed and managed by a very, very good management team. Now, in South Africa, as you know, nothing happens particularly fast. But South Africa, like the United States of the 17th and 18th centuries, a country of laws, not of men. You know, our institutions work, our legal system works. And
well, the institutions held up just about, I would say, during the whole kind of state capture. You know, I mean, they wobbled a bit like in America, maybe.
They did. And David, they're recovering. Okay. And as I say, I point you to what is unfolding at the Zondo Commission, the number of arrests happening. Just today, we are reading that the African National Congress has issued suspension letters to most senior people involved in corruption. And so the wheels of justice grind, they do grind in South Africa.
Right. Okay. Let me just turn again, sorry, to the bank. And maybe I should have asked you this before, but of course, you know, you're 20% owned by ICBC, a Chinese bank. What impact has that had? I mean, has that opened up business to you? It's not obvious how strategic that stake is. And do you think that ICBC will remain a shareholder?
David, I take you back to 2008 when that transaction was entered into. The logic behind it for Standard Bank was that we are a regional champion. We're represented in 20 countries on the African continent. And that was roughly 75% of sub-Saharan GDP.
Yep.
We've got people on the ground. We've got banks that are well capitalized. And we're the largest on the African continent by assets. We believe, I certainly believe, that globalization is taking, if you take a long-term view, is going to continue. There will be strategic competition between the East and the West, between the US and China, but the integration of the world will continue the path that it's been on for centuries. The role of China is going to continue to grow. That economy is large. It's going to continue to grow. And the interaction between the African continent and China is going to continue. Just as the interaction between the African continent and the European Union and the United States is going to continue. We want to, therefore, play in the movement of goods, people, ideas, and capital between China and the African continent, and we're well positioned to do that, and hence the relationship with ICBC. It's a relationship that works exceptionally well.
Okay, there's plenty more I want to talk about, so I'll leave that. Yeah. I wanted to move to the environment and the whole environmental agenda. With COP26 coming up, many countries pledging, you know, net zero by certain dates, companies as well. And where does Africa fit into this? And where do you as a bank fit into this? I mean, some say this is nothing to do with Africa. You know, it has not polluted. It doesn't pollute now. It's almost negligible compared to, you know, global emissions, for example. Or do you see actually the African continent, you know, being involved in this, you know, energy transition, maybe involved in carbon trading, in offsets, green bonds? How do you see Africa fitting into this whole agenda?
So David, like you, you and I were talking earlier on, we're both Manchester United fans. And when I think about the development of Great Britain in the late 1700s and early 1800s, and the path that your nation took, we too on the African continent would love to enjoy the benefits of an industrial revolution. But we also recognize, and as a leader of a financial institution on the continent, that that has to happen within the context of the Paris Agreement, granted. That that development on the continent has to be within the four corners of what the world has agreed. And our strategy in Standard Bank is that we want to drive sustainable economic development on the African continent. That is our purpose. Our purpose as Standard Bank is Africa is our home. We drive and grow. And we continue to make significant progress here on environmental policies and the disclosure thereof. And we've developed comprehensive environmental and social policies and frameworks, which make sure that we are doing world best practice when it comes to E, S, and G in the global debate. As far as this goes, we are heavily involved. We've developed financing mechanisms. We've got a division that supports sustainable finance. We can talk about some of those transactions later on.
So a million green bonds, for example, I think.
Green bonds.
Push your knowledge. You mentioned the Industrial Revolution, you know. I mean, in a sense, the world is asking, it may seem as though the world is asking Africa, not South Africa so much, which has in a sense already gone through an Industrial Revolution, but parts of the continent haven't really. I mean, is it being asked to skip that revolution? And do you oppose that? I mean, for example, I think I'm right in saying that you do finance some coal schemes. You certainly finance some oil and gas schemes. I mean, are you comfortable with that? Or do you feel that you're going to be squeezed out of those kind of investments?
David, so the African continent and Standard Bank aspires to world best practice. So we will do things that are entirely consistent with TCFD principles. In the case of oil and gas and indeed coal activities, the bank will only provide financial products and services where our clients are committed to minimizing or reducing their greenhouse gas emissions. I think the fact of the matter is, David, wherever you go on the continent, roughly 80% of fuel and energy is provided by hydrocarbons. And so we need a transition, definitely, to a clean environment. But we would argue that that transition has to be a just transition. And hence my reference to the need to strike a balance between E and S, economic and social factors. well within the four corners, as I say, of the Paris Agreement.
So you haven't ruled out coal, for example?
So there are certain instances in the case of South Africa or certain countries on the African continent where they've got no option. You have to provide them with that finance, but then we then insist that there'd be a path towards clean emissions and reducing of those greenhouse gas emissions.
I believe you're helping to finance this pipeline that's going to cross Uganda and Tanzania to bring out oil. There's some environmental sort of pushback against that. Are you comfortable with that project?
We are very, very far from reaching a conclusion about whether that project will be financed or not. There are a series of environmental studies that need to be done. The authorities need to pass those environmental studies. We need to make sure that human rights are respected in the process. And we will make sure that if we are involved, it happens within the four corners of those principles that are set out. So we're very, very far from making any decisions about providing finance to that project.
Okay, this question's coming in, but I just like one of my own first. The Mozambique LNG project, which has been in the headlines a lot. Again, I think that you were financing Total. They've now declared force majeure because of some of the sort of violent activity in the north of that country in the Cabo Delgado province. Did you do proper due diligence on that project? Do you think it will still go ahead, and are you comfortable with it?
On that project, we think that weighing the ESG issues leads to the conclusion that the project was worth supporting. So that was our view, especially because liquefied natural gas is an important component of the transition to clean energy, and it actually does generate lower emissions. But I think we need to take account of the fact that some of the contractors there have declared force majeure. We can't comment on the Islamic insurgency in northern Mozambique, except to say that, you know, violence is obviously the polar opposite of human rights and what we believe in. And again, there, David, we will only provide finance once we are satisfied that there is a clear synergy between environmental factors and those social factors.
Right. Someone's asking whether you think that there could be leapfrogging. This is a you know, whether we can move to straight from where we are now to green technology and sort of miss out the dirty phase of the Industrial Revolution. Again, that may not apply so much to South Africa, which is more advanced technologically.
David, I think we can. So I'm not a scientist, I'm a failed lawyer. But I definitely think that we can. And there are examples of transactions where people have provided energy in a clean way using solar, using wind. And so I think that proposition is a valid one, and we need to follow the science.
Right. At Absa, one of the big banks in South Africa, Daniel Minele was forced out as CEO. He resigned. Do you think that was fair? Are South Africa's black CEOs getting a fair shake?
You promised not to ask me difficult questions. No, I'm joking. And I wouldn't want to speak ill of a competitor. We have the highest regard and reverence for Absa. They're a fierce competitor of ours. And they're going through a very difficult period. So I wouldn't want to speak ill of them. So that's the first thing I would say. But I would say that transformation is an important vector in South Africa. But the South African national competitive advantage is ever more important given where we are as a country right now. And transformation is an important dimension of modernizing and improving the national competitive advantage of South Africa.
Yes.
And so we've got to grapple with this as South Africans. We've got to grapple with what it means to be competitive globally and also modernize.
Yes. There's a question here that I must get to, but you've only got 40 seconds to answer. Can South Africa use this crisis as a trampoline to really fulfill its potential, the potential that everybody wants for South Africa?
Yes, it can.
Yes. Tell me how.
Yes, it can. And yes, it must, because we need to use this opportunity that arises from the dislocation of global value chains to insert ourselves in those value chains, whether it be in light manufacturing or in those places that I was referring to as a South African, those places where we've got national competitive advantage. We've got to take this opportunity to become more competitive.
Thank you, Sim. I had loads more to ask you. There's a lot of questions coming through, but sadly, we're up against the clock. But thanks very much for engaging with those questions.
And thank you very much, David. Much appreciated. Thank you.
Thank you. And I'll see you in Johannesburg, I hope.
I look forward to it. I'll buy you a beer.
I look forward to that. Bye.
Bye-bye.
That was Standard Bank Group CEO Sim Shabalala speaking to Financial Times Africa editor David Pilling on the African economy and business in 2021.
Standard Bank. It can be. Standard Bank is an authorized financial services and registered credit provider.